Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The latest Apple iPhone went on sale this week, the first test of the strength of the company since the death of its founder, Steve Jobs, from pancreatic cancer last week. Jobs has been remembered as a visionary. In the tech world, he's something of a god. And in the marketing world, he is seen as the destroyer of old inflexible systems like IBM, which he likened to communism back in 1984.
We shall prevail.
On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
But at his death, the Apple company Steve Jobs founded may look more like the impenetrable machine state he hoped to defeat. Jobs could have revolutionized the industry to make devices more humane and more open and chose not to. Those are the controversial words of monologuist, playwright, and Mac user Mike Daisy, whose one-man show, The Agony and the Ecstasy of Steve Jobs, opens next week here in New York. Mike Daisy joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So there's a fantastic cover, I don't know if you've seen it, of the New Yorker, of Steve Jobs going up to the pearly gates and talking to, you know, whoever it is there at the podium, depending on your proclivity. But the God is holding an iPad.
Right.
And it's such a moving image because, you know, Jobs is an instant icon. But the thing the picture doesn't say is he going to heaven or hell? We kind of don't know if we look really closely at the life of Steve Jobs. We've talked a lot about how he's an icon and you know, a transformer of the world, but there's a dark side as well, and that's what you explore.
Oh, yes, yes.
How hard is that to do given the prevailing notion of Steve Jobs as being, you know, a god himself?
It's challenging. It's been challenging. I just started performing the show last couple of days. I've been doing it for a year now, but doing it in wake of his death. It's transformed. It's blown a wind through the entire piece. And the energy in the room is palpable.
Well, the piece that you wrote for the New York Times suggests that Steve Jobs would have wanted his absolute truth to be presented in some sense. What do you consider his downsides?
Well, I mean, I think that the downside would be immediately visible to anyone in a more rational universe. The downside is how his devices are manufactured. It's the fact that almost all of our manufacturing, especially our electronics manufacturing, is done under incredibly brutal, inhumane conditions, often by children.
And one of the things you quote in your op-ed piece is an individual who was part of a company that has had terrible problems with its labor force assembling iPads was shown one, and he'd never seen it turned on before in his life.
Right, because we are carved off from how things are manufactured. We don't actually understand. We have this vision that they're made on production lines by robots, but the reality is that when the cost of labor is so unbelievably low in Southeast Asia, what actually happens is the highest tech things we own are made by tiny little hands, thousands and thousands of them, by hand, assembling them. Everything we own is handmade.
Now, is that unique to Jobs, or is that just part of the whole Silicon Revolution?
No, I would actually argue that's not part of the Silicon Revolution, but it is the revolution in manufacturing in the last 10 years, especially very recently. It hasn't always been this way, but in the last decade, a little over the decade, the special economic zone in China has exploded, and that is where so many of our things are made. It's not unique to Apple. All devices are made that way.
What qualities of Steve Jobs' personality that are not necessarily complementary are unique to him, and how do you explore that in this show?
Well, I think that he was blessed with the ability to edit. Most people in technology have no editing ability. So the idea is that if something has a feature, it'll be even better if it has two features. It'd be even better if it had three features and a bunch of Chrome buttons. He had the ability to edit and cut things down and look for what was actually needed.
So simplicity in the iPod's look, but it also means that you're only getting a partial view of Steve Jobs, the man.
Yes.
How does that work out, and what do you think he did that distorted his image?
Well, I think that he was aided and abetted by the fact that we will do anything in this country to not think about the implications of our relationship with China. We will go through any contortions necessary to not think about where our objects actually come from. mean, it's actually amazing when we love technology so much. Many of us do. I go to bed with my phone. My phone is often right next to the bed. It's the first thing I often pick up in the morning. And yet we often don't know how all these things are made, even when we love technology.
Is yours an iPhone?
It is.
It is. And you have like a Mac?
I do. I'm a huge Apple aficionado. I've followed Apple my entire life. I feel like I've been in a design conversation with Steve Jobs for years and years.
So many people do. And there are also people sort of coming into public or making public their problems with Steve personally, that if you crossed him, he went insane, and that if he disagreed with you, he would chase you around the world. How does that come into your show?
Well, you know, I talk about the fact that, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but, you know, some of the traits that China has as a government, its incredible secrecy, its Byzantine ways, the fact that people develop an aura of standoffishness because they're afraid of crossing it as an entity and not knowing what it will do, are actually very similar to how Steve Jobs ran Apple and ran his life.
So the irony is that old 1984 commercial, which suggests there's some sort of Maoist kind of Politburo that controls things and that Apple is going to smash it, you say he in fact created.
Yes, I think that they assume that position in the industry. I think that there's no company now that is more like Big Brother than Apple. No one is more involved in what you do with your devices. No one is more integrated in your life. And no one honestly wants to control everything the way that Apple does.
Your shows are known for being edgy and confronting audiences as well as entertaining audiences. How do audiences deal with this kind of double-edged view of Steve Jobs? And you're performing at the Public Theater here in New York. Are you going to do like the Convention Center in San Jose?
We should. We should take it to San Jose. I'd love to see how that would go. I think we will in time, actually. The truth is that in the room, it's interesting. When you get people in the room, you can have a human conversation with them. But the truth is the show is extremely funny. We're talking about technology and people feel this connection and warmth. They loosen up. And then the moment we start talking about China, you can actually feel, and I can see because I look out in the audience, people cross their arms and they get incredibly uncomfortable and they lock up. But then we start talking about something funny again and they loosen up again. And then we talk about China and they close up again. And that alternating is very interesting because over time, people realize they can't laugh unless their arms are uncrossed and they want to laugh. And if you do that enough to somebody, they begin to forget whether they should be closed or open. And human beings, fascinating thing about human beings, they default to open. If they don't know whether they should be closed off emotionally or not, they open. And that's part of the mechanic that lets the show function.
You know, the show is about Steve Jobs, but that's an extraordinary metaphor for the anxiety that we feel economically in America today. This don't necessarily say anything bad about China because we depend on them.
Yes.
Do you feel that in the audience?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, I think one of the things that makes us terrified of China is that it is physically larger than us, that has more people than us, that it's on the other side of the world. And on some level, we know already that things are bad. Like we know, there's no one in any audience I've ever had for this show. If I said the statement, China is a worker's paradise, no one would agree with that. Not one person. Because we know in our hearts something is deeply wrong. And if we're a country of freedom, collaborating with a country that is a fascist country run by thugs, we know that something is wrong. And you can feel that tension.
Well, it's the backdrop, but the sort of main stage is the agony and ecstasy of Steve Jobs, the character at the center of Mike Daisey's latest show set to open off-Broadway. He wrote it, produced it, and stars in it, as he always does. Mike Daisey, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can get more of The Takeaway online. All this morning, we have been talking about the Occupy Wall Street protests. The latest update, the owners of that park where the protesters are camped out, they were planning to clear out the park at 7 a.m. in order to clean it. They now say they're postponing that cleanup. We want to get your views on the protest. Are you part of them? Are you a critic? Are you a bystander? Tell us where you stand. 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can't stand on the sidewalk. It's packed. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.